Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right. It's the Weekly Worldview. We are back. Special Saturday night edition here at the Weekly Worldview. Don't mean to disrupt anybody's weekly feng shui, but we had to do the show on Saturday because I'm going to be making a trek across the snow-covered Rockies tomorrow to beautiful Grand Junction. Just cannot wait. And I just realized this is the final show of 2013. This is it. And most of the news shows and talk shows and all kinds of broadcasts, presentations, are doing their year in review. But I just realized this was the last show of the year about 10 minutes ago. So it was hard for me to pull together a year in review that's really worthy of a broadcast that is as large and significant as the Weekly Worldview. But my, what a year it's been. Isn't that how they all say, well, what a year it's been. It has been a year, as a matter of fact. It's been darn near 12 months worth of one. And some big happenings this year. I'm not sure what's the biggest. The deepest secrets of America's intelligence apparatus exposed by a poser and a queer from a British newspaper. Is that the biggest? I don't know. More mass shootings than one could care to count. Certainly significant. The biggest lie in American history, laid bare for all to see in front of God and everyone, exposed by the same lapdog press that believed any of this back in 2008 when our current communist was elected. A president and a secretary of state who negotiate with our enemies in secret? That was a big story to me. How about the collapse of America's global alliances, forged in the fire of war and tumult for the better part of a century, all deconstructed in a matter of a few months by the current administration? That was big. The final defeat of the West in Iraq and Afghanistan? Big news if you ask me. Well, the year did end on a somewhat of an upbeat note. The first defeat of the homosexual mafia by a genuine American redneck. Some good news. Now, I would have to say the biggest story of the year was the first personhood law passed by a state legislature in North Dakota. I want to congratulate my friends and associates in the only part of the pro-life movement that's pro-life anymore. The personhood wing of the pro-life movement. To me, that was the biggest story of the year. Oh, and I just read that Matt Drudge discovered prayer this year for the first time in his life. What's that mean? I don't know what that means. I read the article. I still don't know what it means. Anyway, all right. So there's the year in review. Roll the music. Time to go. Anyway. I want to do a story right off the top because we ran out of time last week. We don't have a lot of time to play around this time. I want to do a story that is going to help ensure that my extremely attractive audio engineer remains awake, at least for the first story. From the UT San Diego student newspaper, At least two businesses have joined together to sue San Diego over the stench from the sea lion and bird waste at La Jolla Cove. Now, the litigation... Now, if any of you have not yet been to La Jolla Cove, just go there and park on the south side of the cove and try to get out of your car and walk to the beautiful overlook of the ocean without becoming physically ill. When the wind is right, that stench is so thick, you can actually taste it. It's unbearable. I mean, you can almost feel it in the air, like a brown haze. Particulate matter. Anyway, the litigation marks the latest chapter in a long-running debate on how to balance the rights of animals protected by federal and state rules with the concerns of merchants in the area who say that the overpowering odor not only drives away customers, but also poses a public health risk. I tell you what, I felt like I needed a penicillin shot the last time I was there. It was rough. We went to a fancy bistro there and had a, what did we have? We couldn't afford lunch, right? We had some appetizers, $80 worth of appetizers, 15 minutes. But we couldn't have eaten lunch anyways because of the stench. It's just awful. We got some great pictures of the kids with the sea lions, though. I thought they were seals. Did you know they're sea lions?
Yeah, you remember?
Yeah.
They warned us.
Yeah, we had the wildlife officials came and ordered our daughters to move away from the dangerous sea lions.
After all, it's a sea lion.
After all, it's a lion. Anyway, elsewhere along the California coast, communities with high numbers of sea lions have employed a variety of methods over the years, legal and illegal, to disperse the animals or control the smell of their poop. What methods, you might ask? Methods that include falconry, spraying water at the sea lions, shooting them, and blaring certain sounds at them. Well, now, the spraying water, that I understand, that would disperse, right? Disperse the sea. Shooting them would certainly thin out their ranks. I understand that. And blaring certain sounds at them, you know, crank up a Lady Gaga album, send them jumping, diving for the depths of the blue. I can understand that. But it's the falconry thing that I don't understand. How does one use falconry to, anyway, I did as much research as I could online before the show. In the same 10 minutes I was pulling together our year in review segment, I could not find any reports on how falconry might be used. And so we may have to dispatch an investigative journalist team from the Weekly Worldview out to La Jolla, possibly this spring or summer, to investigate how falconry is being used and whether or not it is legal or illegal. And we will return with a report on that in the coming year. That will be one of our New Year's resolutions, to investigate falconry and the stench at La Jolla Cove sometime in the spring or summer of 2014. All right.
It's fun there.
Now that I know, it is fun. It's a lovely place. I wish they'd clean up the stink. That's all. Now that we know my extremely attractive audio engineer is wide awake, let's move on to the politics file. President Bill Clinton and his wife, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, will attend, and Bubba Bill Jeff himself will officially swear in Mayor-elect Bill de Blasio next week, in New York City. De Blasio, according to this report from the Politicker, or is it Politiker? Politiker? Politiker, huh? It's a combination of politics and ticker. Do you get it? It's it's very, very, from Politiker. De Blasio, they say, will be sworn in with a Bible once owned by President Franklin Roosevelt. What a perfect picture of American politics circa 2014, a philanderer and a lesbian swearing in a communist on a Bible once owned by the original Northeast Progressive. That's a perfect, someone should take a picture of that, and I'm sure they will. All right. Now on to the culture file. I want to do my Duck Dynasty stuff right off the top, since I ran out of time last week. Apparently, a deal has been struck. Oh, wait, before we get to that, Jesse Jackson has reared his ugly and rather large and bulbous head in the Duck Dynasty story. He stepped into the uproar, according to Politico, not to be confused with Politiker. That's where the last story was from. I think it's Politiker, but you could read it Politiker. This is Politico, on the other hand, which is the burning, festering remnants of Newsweek magazine. Jesse Jackson has weighed in against Phil Robertson, as you can well imagine. We have a quote. In fact, we may have, do we have audio? I'm asking my extremely attractive, and I mean extremely attractive, audio engineer. We do. We have audio. Jesse Jackson on the Phil Robertson hoopla. At least the bus driver who ordered Rosa Parks to surrender her seat to a white person was following a state law. Robertson's statements were utterly freely and openly without cover of the law within a context of what he seemed to believe was white privilege. Unquote. At which point, some of the brothers in his posse took the bottle of Muscatel out of his hand and helped him walk back through the hood to his crib. I just couldn't resist. Anyway, there's Jesse Jackson's statement. I can't even comprehend it. But apparently, Jackson's Rainbow Push Coalition have demanded a meeting with the A&E Network, who, if they blow the Duck Dynasty deal, they might not have enough money to be an appropriate target for a Jackson Rainbow Push shakedown. I mean, they'd be flat broke. All the rednecks and conservatives and Christians stop watching A&E. They go broke, and Jackson will have very little interest in them all of a sudden. They may have to demand a meeting at Duck Commander headquarters. We want to meet with you at Duck Commander headquarters. The Robertson family was unavailable for comment as they had gone duck hunting. And we have more on that in this next story. The headline screamed out from the Hollywood Reporter, A&E welcomes Phil Robertson back to Duck Dynasty. Yes, the network and the Robertson family announced on Friday. Now, wait a minute. I read the announcement, and it was just A&E, as far as I could tell. They announced Friday that Phil would still be a part of the series. In a statement, here's what A&E had to say. Quote, well, do we have audio on this as well? Wow, you're really good this week. She's going out and getting the audio that other people... Most people are just going to read this. We have the actual audio from a spokesperson for A&E. Here's what they had to say. Roll tape. A&E Network's core values are centered around creativity, inclusion, and mutual respect. We operate with a strong sense of integrity and deep commitment to these principles. Phil and his family have publicly stated they regret the coarse language he used. As you might have seen in many episodes, the Robertson family comes together to reflect and pray for unity, tolerance, and forgiveness. These are three values that we here at A&E Networks also feel strongly about. So after discussions with the Robertson family and numerous advocacy groups, A&E has decided to resume filming of Duck Dynasty later this spring. We will also use this moment to launch a national public service campaign promoting unity, tolerance, and acceptance among all people. A message that supports our core values as a company and the values found in Duck Dynasty. These PSAs will air across our entire portfolio. Thank you, my dear, for that excellent, excellent roll-in of the audio from the A&E spokesperson. So just a few comments. The family publicly stated they regret the coarse language. That's because he was talking about, well, things that you shouldn't really talk about in public, that's all. And they say that the family, at the end of each show, they reflect and pray for unity, tolerance, and forgiveness. Now, I have heard them pray for forgiveness. Never once have I heard them pray for unity and or tolerance in any form or fashion. So they say that they're going to run these PSAs. They almost make it sound as if the Robertson family has agreed to somehow help A&E promote diversity, tolerance, respect. But I don't, I mean, if that's the case, I would be shocked. And let me go on record right now and state that if the Robertson clan does not walk away from the A&E network in the very near future, I will lose some respect for them. Now, I had already pretty much, I had gotten over that show. My wife and I started watching it when it first started, what, 2, 3, 4 years ago? Anyway, it was cute and you know, funny, and we liked the fact that they prayed at the end. But we hated the fact that the kids go to the government schools, and there's such an obvious difference when you look at the three generations of the family. when you look at the father and mother who still live in the same house they bought 50 years ago, even though they're worth $100 million apiece. And then you look at the second generation, they all live in mansions in the suburbs, and their kids all go to government school, and their kids all look tired and bored and slovenly all the time. I mean, you can just see it's a picture of the degeneration of not just a family, but of America. It's a picture of it. So we kind of had lost interest in the show when it started to become more scripted than natural. I mean, I guarantee you, season number one, when they teed off those golf balls and shot them with the shotguns, that was real. You knew that family did stuff like that all the time. They didn't have to make that up. But it's become a bit contrived over the past couple seasons. And we hadn't really watched it much this year. But we were very encouraged when Phil stood by his remarks, and we'll be even more encouraged if they decide to part company with A&E, because they've proven to be just a bunch of deviant, knee-jerk deviants is what they've proven to be. They've proven to be knee-jerk deviants over there at A&E. And were I a part of the Robertson clan, I don't think I could work with them anymore after this incident. That's all. Anyway, according to the Hollywood Reporter, the entire Robertson family has been on hiatus for duck hunting season, which is a contractual stipulation. Now, see, you don't have to make that kind of stuff up. It's in the contract. We don't film during duck season. We go duck hunting. In fact, I think last week, Phil was supposed to sit down with Baba Walters. But instead, he went duck hunting. And the whole rest of the family's sitting there, well, we don't know where Phil is. I woke up this morning, he was already gone. Took his shotgun, and we ain't seen him since. Anyway, duck season, by the way, continues through January 26th in Louisiana, at which time we here at the Weekly Worldview hope that there will be a strong statement condemning A&E and announcing the impending end of the duck dynasty.
Hello, hello, grandpa.
It's science!
It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you with us on a special Saturday night edition here at the Weekly Worldview. And we will return now to the files of the Weekly Worldview. We go now to the Rim of Hell file. It's a brand new file that we couldn't help but create. And it's datelined in Utah, a CNN story. Peter Brownstein. Had gone down to the Salt Lake City office there in the Capitol to bear witness to a marriage. What he found there was a line that snaked along halls on two floors of the building. You see what had happened? Homosexuals had rushed in to get married after a district judge allegedly struck down Utah's ban on same-sex marriage. And so the homos just lined up around the block. It was pandemonium. And Mayor Ralph Becker, who's apparently the mayor there in Salt Lake City, he is quoted as calling the scene, quote, thrilling pandemonium, unquote. That's the mayor of Salt Lake City basically praising lawlessness as thrilling pandemonium. All right. Now, after some of the fags, Peter Brownstein noticed that some of the faggots had brought along children in strollers, and everybody was hungry, Brownstein decided to go out and pick up pizzas and hand out pizza to all the the homos and the children or the victims in their clutches there at the state capitol in Salt Lake City. He and his 14-year-old Eagle Scout son handed out slices of pizza to the government employees and the homosexuals waiting to defile the notion of marriage there in the capitol. And they performed this task, passing out pizza, dressed in their Boy Scout uniforms. That's right. Yes. Mr. Brownstein, he replaced the blue neckerchief of his Scoutmaster's uniform with one in the colors of the rainbow, which the homos claim as the colors of homosexual pride. So here's an Eagle Scout and his dad dressing up like they're at the San Francisco Gay Pride Parade, handing out pizza to the unwashed masses of homos, the pile of homos there at the Capitol in Utah. CNN is a bit surprised that such a scene could happen at what they call the conservative epicenter of Mormonism, Utah. Yeah. Well, note to CNN, this is more proof that pagan religions, no matter how squeaky clean they appear on the outside, are no hedge against the destruction of a culture and a civilization. I'm sorry if I offend any Mormons out there. Yeah, it's just a pagan religion. Let's see here. Oh, the Brownstein, one of the Rainbow Neckerchief, the Scoutmaster, he was apparently reprimanded last June for participating in full Boy Scout Master uniform in the Utah Homosexual Pride Parade out there in Salt Lake City. Yeah. So there you have it. Straight from the rim of hell file, which Salt Lake City is currently swirling and circling, and I hear a giant sucking sound. All right. Now, move on to the culture file. Gregory Kenny is a 50-year-old American, and he taught gym at the Trinity School for 16 years. This is on the Upper West Side of New York City. And he taught school there for many years, 16 years, that is, until a homosexual athletic director took over in 2009. Well, this particular homo allegedly forced him to coach three sports, even though his contract only requires him to coach two teams at any given time. He put a heavy workload on him. By the way, this homo athletic director, she's a dyke. Yes, I know. They're the worst kind to have as your boss, I'm sure. He told the dyke that he couldn't keep working nights and weekends, so she reported him to the headmaster. While at the same time, a single female teacher faced no scrutiny when she refused to coach a third sport at the school. So Mr. Kenny claims the allegedly biased athletic director routinely favored other single younger females without children and discriminated against him because of his gender, sexual orientation, traditional family status, and age. Basically, because he's a married white guy with kids, she discriminated against him. She eventually fired him, as a matter of fact. Three other married coaches with young children have also been fired at the school, and Mr. Kenny was replaced by a homosexual female. Yes, dyke for short. Yes. Now, he's filed a lawsuit, and he's seeking damages as well. He should. And, well, that's just the state of the culture from the culture file. You let the homos out of the closet, and eventually they start shoving all the normal people into the closet. And it's not a pleasant sight to see. Now, this next story is, well, it's shocking. It's from the Justice File. Dateline Huntsville, Alabama. Carl Philip Harold faces charges of producing child pornography, distributing said, allowing his child to be depicted in said pornography, sodomy, sexual abuse, and aggravated child abuse. So Harold's domestic partner, Charles Dunavant, is also identified and is suspected as a partner in the crimes. And he faces charges including sexual torture, sodomy, aggravated child abuse, and transmitting or exposing a person to a sexually transmitted disease. This is a homo and his boyfriend. And this homo and his boyfriend used the man's own son to produce pornography. His own son. These are the poster boys for homosexual parents. Perverts. Unbelievably shocking. Their bail has been set at $1 million in cash. And they're going to go on trial there in Huntsville, Alabama. His own son. In Alabama, I know, the buckle of the Bible Belt. Can you believe it? Talk about the rim of hell. I tell you what. All right. Now, from the plain old-fashioned sin file, because sins like I've been describing here are so vile and vulgar that I hate to even mention them on the program. So we have established now the plain old-fashioned sin file. Five people were shot just after midnight outside Slick's Go-Go Bar in Irvington, New Jersey. Yeah, three died and two other men were shot and have survived. A neighbor who lives by the strip club told the news there that he never goes to the bars in the neighborhood because they're too dangerous. We have a quote from one of the neighbors. He says, "That ain't the first time somebody got shot and killed at Slick's. That happens all the time." According to CBS in New York, there have been at least two other shootings at Slick's in recent years, including one in 2010 that left one man dead. There you have it from the plain old-fashioned sin file. You know, folks, strip clubs should be illegal. They should be closed, bulldozed, turned into churches. Well, not by force, though. Not by force, but by choice. See, we need a revival. And the folks who open strip clubs and degrade and victimize women, we need to convince them to bulldoze their establishments or turn them into churches. It needs to happen by choice and not by force. See, I am pro-choice. Absolutely. But strip clubs should be illegal. You shouldn't be allowed to do that. But at least it doesn't turn your stomach. Someone getting shot outside of a go-go bar doesn't turn your stomach as much as the scoutmaster handing out pizza to the pile of queers at the Salt Lake City Capitol. Just, well, we have another story from the old, just the plain old-fashioned sin file. Let's see here. TLC, the TV network, has announced it will air a full series about a progressive polygamous family from Utah. The star of the show has five wives and 24 children. He's just an old-fashioned polygamist. You know, just the old-fashioned sin.
He's a Christian, all right. Too, right?
Well, he's a Christian. Well, he's a Mormon or some sort. I didn't read enough into the story to find out if he claims any religion, but just polygamy.
Right?
What's that?
Mormons are Christian.
Well, they're the squeakiest, cleanest-looking Christians you ever did see, I'll tell you what. They have no body odor because they have special underwear. Yeah. Oh, you think I'm making that up? They do.
Okay.
All right, now. Let's move on to the justice file. A 27-year-old felon, this is according to the Billings Gazette in Montana, a 27-year-old felon who's been in and out of state custody since age 14 is now facing 8 years in state prison for violating the terms of his release and 6 months in the county jail for fracturing his girlfriend's face in three places. Pacer Anthony Ferguson is the aforementioned felon. And District Judge Todd Baugh has ordered Ferguson, has sentenced Ferguson to 6 months in county jail and also ordered Ferguson to write the phrase, "Boys do not hit girls," 5,000 times. This is from the creative justice file. You see, when you can't punish people the way they should be punished, judges are forced to get creative to the point of being ridiculous. So, and here's a fella. Listen, this fella, Pacer Anthony Ferguson, he should have been executed about 14 years ago. At age 13, Ferguson and another minor released a train car in Billings that rolled down the tracks and killed a man. Yeah, and this guy's still walking around on the face of the earth, and now he's punching out his girlfriend. And what does the judge do? Toss him in the clink and make him write, "Boys do not hit girls," 5,000 times.
It's a face.
Worldview is back. I'm here with my extremely attractive audio engineer. We delve now into the domestic tranquility file as if it couldn't get any worse. It does. A 49-year-old father walked into the elementary school where his son attended in Tokyo and set fire to himself and his 9-year-old son. He died from his injuries while the youngster remains in the hospital. In critical condition, the man apparently poured a flammable liquid over himself and his son. While holding the boy, he lit the fuel, and they both suffered serious burns. Investigators discovered that the man had recently been separated from his wife, and they were finalizing their divorce. So over in Japan, they have very strict gun control laws. But they don't do a very good job of controlling the immorality that destroys marriages. And the immorality that destroys marriages leads to violence and death. And in this case, no gunshots, but a father setting himself and his son on fire. Just awful. Awful. Another one from, this story I have had a hard time with all week. I've been following this story. I've got this listed both in the domestic tranquility file and the personhood file because I'm having a hard time understanding this family. I read from Breitbart a story, Dateline Fort Worth, a couple days before Christmas. A Texas man says he wants to end life support for his wife, but state law forbids it. Why? His wife is pregnant. Now, he found her collapsed on the floor of their home, the victim of a suspected pulmonary embolism, and she has been declared brain dead. At the time, she was 18 weeks pregnant and was declared brain dead and was put on life support. Well, now her husband, Eric Munoz, who's a paramedic, wants to end the life support.
What's wrong with him?
That was exactly my question. What is wrong with this guy? By sustaining the life of the mother, obviously the life of the child will be sustained. But the father says, quote, they don't know how long the baby has been without nutrients and oxygen. But he says, I'm aware of the challenges I might face ahead. He says his wife, who was also a paramedic, and he had decided they didn't want to be kept alive by machines before his wife Marlise Munoz fell ill and became brain dead. And he says he now wants to end her life support and effectively kill his child. But Texas law says no. A person may not, here's what the Texas law says. A person may not withdraw or withhold life-sustaining treatment under this subchapter from a pregnant patient. That means even if the patient is brain dead, if keeping her body alive will sustain the life of the child through to term, Texas law says you must sustain that life. Bravo to Texas. Probably a law left over that someone hadn't noticed for years. Eric Munoz, The report says that Eric Munoz will have to get a judge to grant an injunction or a restraining order in order to end the woman's life. And now listen to this. The mother of the pregnant woman, the mother of Marlise Munoz, has weighed in. Her mother, Lynn Machado, She says she's been through a living hell because her daughter's been brain dead since her husband discovered her unconscious at home back on November 26th. The family says she's being kept alive on a ventilator in Fort Worth, even though she would not want her life prolonged by a machine. And as we said, Texas law says that life-sustaining treatment cannot be withheld from a pregnant patient. Munoz was 14 weeks pregnant when she became hospitalized. She is currently, right now, as we speak, as we go to air, she is 19 weeks pregnant, which in the state of Texas, pro-lifers apparently think it would be okay to kill the child because they just, all the pro-lifers were ecstatic that they passed a law saying that a child at this age could be legally killed. Do you remember that? I remember that. The Munoz family, including the mother, in this case, the grandmother of the baby in question, and the husband, the father, they want the law that orders life-sustaining treatment for pregnant patients. They want that law to be rewritten or repealed. The family is concerned over fears that oxygen deprivation may have damaged the fetus. In both of these stories, they refer over and over to this child as a fetus. Doctors won't know for sure the cause of Munoz's death until an autopsy can be performed. A pulmonary embolism is suspected. Wow. The mother said, "We still have about a month to go before we have more answers to questions about what's going to happen next. Although there are tests at the fetal stage that can pick up on problems, they cannot provide certainty about normal development of the child." You know what, Grandma? Nobody can guarantee normal development, certainty about the development of any child during a pregnancy. So the solution in the minds of the mother and the husband, apparently, are to kill the baby. It's just devastating. Devastating. I mean, we read stories about Texas and how free it is and how great it is and how wonderful the people are down there. And I grew up down there, and they're a fairly decent lot. But I'll tell you what, for this to be the position of the grandmother and the father of this baby, they should get down on their knees and thank God that they have an opportunity to preserve this child's life. But instead, they want to kill the baby because they're afraid that I can't comprehend it. I want to move on. I want to move on to something that's not so depressing and demoralizing. I'm going to go to the bad religion file. Again, another report from Breitbart. Young people in Britain are apparently confused about the story of Christ's birth as told in the Bible. A recent poll in the United Kingdom found that 1 in 10 young people, that's folks aged 18 to 24, believe that Father Christmas is indeed a biblical figure mentioned in the gospel accounts. Just so you know, Father Christmas, that's what they call Santa Claus in England. 10% of young people in England, they think he was actually mentioned in the Bible. 7% of respondents believe there was a Christmas tree mentioned in the Bible. And a third of those polled believe the Bible specifies December 25th as the day Christ was born. Okay. And a full 25% of respondents in the poll said that they were certain that baby Jesus did not cry when he was born. They were sure that was in the Bible too. So when you separate a people from the scriptures for a generation or two, as has happened in England and Europe, and frankly here in America, all that's left is the traditions and the myths. And it's sad. It's just sad to see these young people who have been abused. This is child abuse for people not, these children not to know the number one bestseller in all history, and they have no familiarity with it whatsoever. The most famous man in the history of the world, and they have just a passing familiarity with his name as it's associated with Christmas and Christmas trees and Father Christmas. It's all that's left is the traditions and the myths. What will spur Europe toward repentance? What could it be? I'm afraid it's probably going to be something catastrophic that will spur Europe to turn back to the living God who blessed their continent for centuries. All right. Now, another report on the Pope. Now, you know, I have a file now well established that the Pope is a communist. I know several of my associates have told me that that's a bit hyperbolic to say that the Pope is a communist. They say, well, maybe he's a socialist, maybe he's a progressive. But I like to cut right to the chase because I know where socialism and progressivism leads, and it's the communism. But this story is not from the Pope is a communist file. This is from the Pope is not a preacher file, and that's a shame. You'd think that the Pope would be a good preacher, but he's not. At Vatican City this week past, over Christmas as a matter of fact, the Pope called on atheists to unite with believers to work for a homemade peace that can spread across the world. Excuse me, Francis, come here. Why not ask the atheists to consider the story of Jesus Christ, especially on the one day when the whole world, even the atheists and the heathens, have their attention focused on the topic of the birth of Jesus Christ? I mean, just as a basic, like, preaching 101, how about ask them to consider the story of Jesus Christ and the claims he made? How else can we unite them with us, Mr. Pope Francis? They can't unite with us to work for a greater peace as long as they tread the Son of God underfoot and blaspheme his name, and you should be offended by that, and you should warn people. You're the Pope, after all. You should at least be a half-decent preacher, but the Pope is not a preacher. He said in his Christmas address that people of other religions were also praying for peace, and he urged atheists to join forces with believers. He says, I invite even non-believers to desire peace. Let us all unite, either with prayer or with desire or whatever, you know, noisemakers, I don't know, fireworks. Everybody, let's unite either with prayer or desire for peace. A very bland milquetoast, kind of a nebulous statement there by the Pope. He called for social harmony in South Sudan without mentioning or asking the Muslims to please stop bombing, burning, raping, and killing the Christians. He didn't mention that. He just called for social harmony. What a lousy preacher. If I was sitting in the pews, I'd get up and walk out. Like, this guy. I mean, there's a line in the scriptures, and I may mangle it a little bit. But it says, if the sounding of the trumpet is uncertain, how will the people know how to respond or what to do? And that's about the most uncertain sound I've heard out of a preacher, since I was at a Methodist church. Now, United Methodist Church, not too long. All right. Now, let's move further into the bad religion file. Oh, wait a minute. This Pope story was not in the bad religion file. Let me refile that into the bad preacher file. That'll be a new file. So now, deeper into the bad religion file, we've got a story on Charles Krauthammer, a noted columnist, talking head, and political commentator. You may have seen him on television. I can assure you, if you have and you have small children in the house, you'll remember it. At least your kids will. Asked in a recent interview to describe his belief in God, Charles Krauthammer replied that he doesn't believe in God, but he still fears him. Charles Krauthammer, by the way, is a certified genius. He's a genius. He's a doctor and a lawyer. And a genius, certified, Mensa member, all of that. Says he doesn't believe in God, but he still fears him. he says, I would associate myself with Einstein's conception of God, which was a recognition and an awe before the mystery of the order and beauty of the universe, which would imply that there is something very mysterious and very awesome and awe-inspiring about the universe. I think what Newton once said, quote, I feel like a snail on the side of a great ocean, and the idea that I could understand a notion like God, or that humans can, is, as it were, expecting a snail to understand the motion of the tides through calculus and physics. That's not possible, unquote. So he's quoting Newton, and he's at least making allusion to Einstein. And he says he does not believe in God, but he still fears him. Now, there's a line in the Bible about people like this, about people who know that God is God, and they'll even call God God, but they will not worship him, nor will they give him glory. And that is the lot of a professional psychobabbler like Charles Krauthammer. What's that? No, he's either a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I'm not sure. I think they both fall under the classification, the overall classification of a professional psychobabbler. There is no turning back. No. There is no turning back. On the run. Welcome back. It's the Weekly Worldview. Thank you, Bob. Appreciate that. All right. We move now into the war file. A report from the Middle East. Christians throughout the Holy Land are a rapidly dwindling minority. Many feel they have no choice now but to emigrate. In Iraq alone, I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the show with our year in review segment, that the final defeat of the West in Iraq and Afghanistan has been confirmed this year. And here is evidence of that defeat. In Iraq alone, since the fall of Saddam, two-thirds of Christians in that nation have fled. At least 1 million Christians have fled Iraq since 2003, most of them to Syria. Talk about out of the frying pan, into the fire. When you have to flee for Syria, you have a miserable lot in life, and that's the lot of our Christian brothers and sisters in Iraq. In Syria, there have been reports of reports of rape, murder, and attacks directed at them in the Christian community, and Christians there live in terror. And the ancient Syrian Armenian community is all but gone. This is from GuardianLV.com. Which probably related to the Guardian newspaper in the UK. To be a Christian in the Holy Land, the report states, is to live in fear. 100,000 Christians are killed every year for their belief and their faithfulness to Jesus Christ in the Middle East. So that's something we need to remember and meditate upon and pray about as we go into yet another year of chaos, warfare, and bloodshed in the Middle East. Perhaps the dawning of the atomic militant Islamist. We need to pray for our brothers and sisters in the Middle East, and we need to actively help get them out. I have resolved in 2014 that I will be looking for a charity that actively assists Christians in fleeing the Middle East. And I'm going to put some of my money there. And when I find that charity, I will let you know. One more line from the story. Historian Tom Holland has noted how deeply ironic it is that two devoutly Christian leaders, George W. Bush and Tony Blair, brought about inadvertently the final demise of Christianity in the Middle East by invading Iraq. It is ironic that in our quest to preserve some sort of secular peace in the Middle East, we have utterly destroyed the Christian family there. And I would credit George W. Bush and Tony Blair with having a hand in that, but I would never call them devoutly Christian leaders. I'm sorry. I guess it doesn't take much to impress historian Tom Holland with one's Christianity. Indeed. All right, from the politics file, as we rapidly run out of time here, Susan Rice has reared her ugly head, and she says that what the NSA and our intelligence community does as a whole is designed. She was asked about the NSA spy scandal. She says what NSA does as a whole is designed to protect Americans and our allies, and they do a heck of a good job at it, says Susan Rice. This is the woman who lied about the video. You remember Susan Rice. Proven liar, exposed in front of God and everybody on national television as a bald-faced liar, and she got a promotion. And now she's on the National Security Council. Anyway, she says they do a heck of a good job at it. And this is where I come down on this whole NSA thing. I think the government has a right to the data. I'm sorry. All of you people who think that the government's invading your privacy, get over yourselves. The government has a right. If you're going to find a needle in a haystack, you need a haystack. I forget who said that. That's a pretty good line. And I think the government has the right to the data. But they're not doing a heck of a good job at it, as Ms. Rice says here. In fact, they're violating the trust that the government should have when it comes to tracking data in order to find terrorists. And I'm afraid, and I think it's been proven on a number of occasions, that the government is using the information that the intelligence services gather in an illegal and partisan political manner to persecute their political enemies. And on that note, I agree with all you people who are mad about the NSA. I don't think the government has the right to take information that they glean in their daily intelligence work and then use it against their political enemies. And that's where we need to focus, on the criminal activities of specific people in the administration, and those people should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, drummed out of office, thrown in prison, and punished to the full extent of the law. We have more from Susan Rice. Oh, she says regarding intelligence, she says it's been worth what we've done to protect the United States. And the fact that we have not had a successful attack on our homeland since 9/11 should not be diminished. Diminished, Susan? Diminished? How can it be diminished? It's not even true. You don't remember Fort Hood? You don't remember LAX? You don't remember the Boston Marathon? Susan? Hey, Earth to Susan, hello? Well, you can't diminish something that's not even true, and the statement you just made is simply not true. Yeah. Okay, so we'll move on from Susan Rice. I don't know how she got on the show. I thought I threw this story away, and I'm at the end of the show, and I'm like Pavlovianly just going through my stories. All right, from the politics file, this is from Fox News. When budget woes reduce the sheriff's department in one rural Oregon county to a bare-bones force, residents decided to take matters in their own hands and created an armed patrol group in defiance of local officials. Their decision has raised safety concerns with the county government, which would prefer that residents instead hike their own taxes to fund the hiring of trained deputies. So do you get this? This is disgusting. Disgusting example of what I call the Obama budget strategy. Listen to this. The government in Josephine County, Oregon, where nearly 70% of the land is owned by the U.S. government, has long relied on federal timber subsidies to pay their bills. Well, when the federal government terminated these funds, county officials tried to pass a tax levy to make up the budget shortfall. You see, you live by the government teat and you die by the government teat. And so when the government money dried up, they tried to hike everybody's taxes. Well, the county's residents voted against the tax rate increase. And as a result, the Josephine County Sheriff's Office was gutted. And dozens of prisoners were released from the county jail. And the sheriff's department even encouraged people who felt unsafe to relocate out of their county. And this is the Obama budget strategy. Don't eliminate any patronage jobs. Don't get rid of any of the layers and layers of duplicitous and duplicate government bureaucracy. Let's gut the one things that'll scare people and that they'll be able to see it. It's just like Obama putting up the barricades around the World War II Museum. Basically just these fat slobs in government trying to scare the people and make them feel the pain when they refuse to pay any more taxes. It's unbelievable. Citizens believe that politics are actually behind the decision to not fund the sheriff's department. Do you think maybe politics are behind it? But the Josephine County Commissioner says that the residents of the county who oppose the tax rate increase need to realize that there is simply no fat to cut in the government, and we have to cut. Naturally, we have to cut the sheriff's department. And if you're scared, well, maybe you should just move out. And if I was living, if I'm living in Josephine County, Oregon, I'm packing a bag tonight. And I'm saying I'm taking myself, my family, our productivity, and our little portion of your tax base, and we're moving elsewhere. Thank you very much. Anyway, just disgusting how politics have evolved here in just the past few years. I don't think even a few years ago, politicians would have had the nerve to do some of the things that are being done as it relates to taxes and scaring people and actually putting people at risk and in danger to make and win a political argument. It's disgusting. All right. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, Aiken County Police in Aiken, South Carolina, say that Lucinda Rudolph got away from a store security officer at a Walmart after shoplifting several items. She sped away in her car, and officers tried to pull her over, but she kept driving until she hit another car head-on. And she was killed in the crash. Yes. A child was with her and apparently was unharmed, and we don't have a report on whether anyone else was seriously injured in the crash. So she got away with the shoplifting, sped away in her car. She ends up dead. And, you know, death is not the prescribed punishment for theft. But sometimes it is, nonetheless, as Lucinda Randolph, as Lucinda Randolph proves here, sometimes you do get the death penalty, even for shoplifting. And that is why, when justice is perverted and criminals have no fear of punishment, you think she was actually afraid of what kind of punishment she might receive for shoplifting? She had no fear. Do you think she was afraid in any way of the punishment she might face for recklessly speeding through town to get away? She had no fear. And what ends up happening? We have some people who are probably severely injured in a head-on collision, and she receives the death penalty for her crime. So justice is important, ladies and gentlemen. Justice should strike fear into the hearts of criminals, and it should help to restrain men and women from their evil desires. And it does not, and that gets people killed. All right, we'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. I want to thank my friends at KGOV, at TheologyOnline.com, at American Right to Life, my extremely attractive audio engineer, and as always, my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. Like I say, I'll be back with you next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.